We have had conversations on this show before about, in particular, indigenous health and how many of the systemic disparities mean that Native populations are more vulnerable to certain kinds of threats. Our community is expanding its range, its education efforts, its awareness efforts. Tonight there is going to be a Zoom and Facebook live stream, a panel discussion called Disinfecting Misinformation, COVID-19 Health Officials Panel. And it is put on by UMD's NAACP and the Duluth NAACP Health and Environmental Equity Committee. It's going to be some incredible presenters, and it's going to be a wonderful conversation. One of those guests is Dr. Glenn Simmons, Jr., and he joins us this morning on the phone to talk a little bit more about the panel. Glenn, thanks so much for being here. I really appreciate your taking a minute or two for us this morning. Thanks again.
Well, thanks for having me.
So let's talk a little bit about some of these inequities in the some of these systemic inequities. When you start talking about some of these things like access to health care and things like that we don't normally think about, things like food deserts and like actually getting to doctor's appointments, which a lot of us take for granted. We jump in the car, we go, but it isn't that simple for a lot of people. Let's talk about some of those systemic inequities that make already vulnerable populations even more vulnerable when it comes to some health issues.
Well, first off, thank you for giving me an opportunity to speak on this. When we talk about inequities, I think it's important to understand that the idea of having the ability to choose how you go about accessing resources is not equal for all parties. And particularly when we look at healthcare, we know that taking the time just to go see a doctor means that you have to have that availability in your schedule. And so for individuals that are kind of living in a lower socioeconomic status, that can easily mean losing money that you need to survive, to eat, to provide for your family. And so it often becomes a decision between taking care of your health or taking care of your wealth. And sometimes that decision isn't so easy. It's not so clear cut. And then also to the idea of just taking care of food needs when individuals are balancing their budget and having to think, well, I have X number of mouths to feed, but I only have so many dollars to spend, then that also influences how individuals are able to even go about doing things that can maintain their health and keep them from having to go see physicians and other healthcare professionals. So it's a very complex issue that starts at some very fundamental places in, you know, an individual's daily life.
And many of us are lucky enough not to have to make those decisions where everything comes right down to can I afford it? If I go to see the doctor, it's going to cost me money. If I spend a little extra on this fresh produce, first of all, it might be money that I don't have. Secondly, it might go bad after a couple of days, and I've got people to feed at home. So I need to make, you know, another choice, something that is where I can get a little bit more for my money, for example.
Right, right. And that's something we talk about quite often here at the medical school, because there's a concept of caloric density, right? And unfortunately, quite often, the more calorie-dense foods, the ones that give you the most energy, tend to be the ones that are the least helpful or healthy. You know, so a head of lettuce is not a lot of calories compared to a candy bar. And when you need energy to just get through the next day or just get through the next hour or so or that next shift at work, those decisions end up being made based on, you know, some really definitive metrics, but they're not always best for the long term.
Our community has gotten a little bit better, a little bit more on the bandwagon. As some of the grocery stores have closed across the community, people have started to, there have been a lot of different people really bringing the idea of food deserts to the attention of the community and saying this is a bad thing and we need to do something about it. we've got a shirt growing season, so that's still always a challenge, but there's been a real push to make more healthy foods available to folks and make it easier for them if transportation is an issue. One of the things that I've occasionally struggled with on the short term, so maybe it doesn't really count, but when I've heard it said so often, I've read some articles about it, it's really expensive to be poor because you can't do a lot of the maintenance things that would make perhaps it easier for you to have a car in working order or this, that, or the next thing. And so transportation also to some of these things, doctor's appointments or grocery stores or whatever, can really be a challenge for folks. Talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. And especially here in the Northland, we have a short growing season and we have a very long winter. And even for those of us who may have all-wheel drive vehicles, you know, getting around in the snow is not necessarily the easiest thing to do. Luckily, we have decent public transportation, but again, it's not perfect. And for individuals who have small children and things like that, that also becomes an additional layer. And so you're right. It does kind of come down to the idea that it's very expensive to be poor because, or to be without significant financial resources, you know, to say it another way, because you end up having to investing in certain resources or equipment, cars, and things like that. But then in the long run, you end up not being able to get to medical appointments to take care of your health, which in the long run can be very expensive. You may not have the opportunity to improve your employment situation because the employer that may be able to pay you a better wage or a living wage even may be on the other side of town, and getting there through the winter months may be very difficult because things tend to run a little bit slower when it's cold. So we know that these things are happening, and we're working hard to identify ways around these issues, but it's a very complex problem in terms of how many things have to be re-engineered to take into account the fact that some people are starting from positions that are below suboptimal, whether it's access to educational opportunities, whether it's access to affordable child care, because individuals who are single parents having to have a child in daycare or even in school can sometimes also be an additional burden that has to be overcome in order for them to improve the situation that they're currently living in.
And child care, I was a single mom, and at the same time as you realize that this person is perhaps the most important person that you're giving money to every month or every couple of weeks, mm-hmm. it does take a huge chunk out of your paycheck, and that makes you worry about what else am I having to shortchange in order to make this whole thing work. It can really be difficult. Right. I took a look at the statistics from the Minnesota Department of Health this morning, just out of curiosity, and there are very, very small percentages of Native populations, Black, Indigenous, people of color populations represented in the COVID mm-hmm. statistics for our state. But in a sense, it's hard to know how to interpret those because the state is still predominantly white in a lot of ways. Talk a little bit about how some of these systemic issues that we've been talking about in this program for years are making it particularly frightening now for people of color.
Well, so one of the things that's becoming more apparent to the general public is the idea that comorbidities, these chronic health issues, are almost hand-in-hand with the most severe outcomes when it comes to COVID-19 infection. And we have known for several years, several decades actually, that underrepresented populations, African Americans in particular, and Native Americans, tend to have the lion's share of those comorbidities. And they are unfortunately leading the way in terms of having the highest incidences of some of these comorbidities, such as cardiovascular disease, diabetes, and cancer, and several forms of cancer, in fact. And what we know in Minnesota in particular, as you mentioned, that the overall percentages of these different populations of people of color are relatively small. But if you then look at those populations by themselves and then ask, well, what is the percentage of the worst outcomes with various diseases based on that population by itself, you start seeing that their percentages are extremely high within those numbers. So if you say have only 100,000 African Americans in the entire state of Minnesota, you may have a higher proportion of them having comorbidities and therefore having a higher likelihood of having worse outcomes with diseases or infections such as COVID-19. Another thing, you know, one last point I would like to make is that testing is not universal. We are still prioritizing testing. And so to the point that we were making earlier about the ability to move around transportation, things like that, or even the ability to take off of work in order to take care of some of these things, those now are playing a factor even in our ability to identify whether large significant groups of people of color are actually infected because they may not be getting tested in the first place. And now that means that we may be underrepresenting any numbers that we're seeing for those particular populations because they may not be accessing testing facilities, and they may also be unwilling to go to the facilities in the first place because of historical distrust of the medical establishment.
Well, if you go, and I've heard these, I mean, I've just heard from friends, if you go someplace and you walk into a place as a person of color and somebody makes a crack at you or somebody gives you a look or is passively, aggressively hostile, it doesn't matter if you're like my friend and you're a medical doctor. It matters, you know, I mean, enough of that, a couple of times of that, and I wouldn't want to go any place either. One of the things that I have been watching and hoping, and I'm pretty Pollyanna about this, I'm afraid, or I'm trying not to be, but one of the things that I'm seeing are a lot of the places where the system is broken coming to light. A lot of the people that we have overlooked for a lot of time, perhaps as a society, their importance, the critical work that they do, how important they are, their vulnerabilities are also coming to light. Do you feel as though we have an opportunity perhaps now to move forward differently?
I would say absolutely. Unfortunately, there is nothing like a crisis to show how things should be prioritized. When we are critically in need of certain goods and services, we become acutely aware of who's responsible for how those things make it, you know, to our homes or to our businesses and alike. And I feel as though, similar to the situation with most K-12 educators, we need to value individuals throughout our entire society appropriately, because without each individual in these various sectors, the whole system doesn't work, you know? And it's unfortunate that we're seeing it happen under these circumstances. Individuals such as those who are working in the environmental services in hospital systems, or even the individuals who are maintaining our grocery stores right now, and those who are in the transportation services, these individuals are right now keeping things going when the majority of folks are stuck at home. And I think we have to start to kind of pivot and take this opportunity to not just verbally say, well, we appreciate you, but to really reflect that in the sense that maybe, you know, people get better wages or maybe they get better benefits. But at the very least, especially in this moment, that we protect these individuals, because if they're out there doing a job that is absolutely essential, then we make sure we do everything that we can to protect them while they're out there doing a service for our society and for our community.
Do you think these people are being put in an untenable position in many instances where, because they may be living so close to the edge financially, they are having to decide between, and I'm talking, you know, not only about essential workers, mm-hmm. but I'm talking about perhaps some people that work in or for businesses that want to reopen, that they're being put in a position mm-hmm. where they need to choose between feeding their families and maybe getting sick.
I do think that it's a very, very risky place to put an individual in, and it's unfortunate. And as a matter of fact, there is a history behind situations like this. So in terms of things like organ donation, okay, now this is kind of an extreme example, but this is kind of proving the point. There are laws against people being able to sell their own organs, okay? And the reason for that is because the people who would be the most likely, or at least this is the philosophy behind it, the reason is because people who are most likely to do it would be the folks who have the most to gain from doing it, or therefore those who have the least resources, right? And so that means that the poorest of us, those who have the least financial capital, would be the most likely to try to sell their organs to gain capital. And so that then means that there's going to be an undue burden on a significant portion of our population, and that's just not right. And so I think the same thing would be analogous in looking at folks who are talking about going back to work, or businesses who are talking about opening, and basically telling employees either you work or you don't have a job. I feel like we need to be as creative as we can, especially employers. I employ people myself, and for me, I'm, you know, trying to bend over backwards to find ways to keep people engaged with the work, but not to bring them into an environment where I can't guarantee that they're safe.
This is fascinating. Let me ask you one final question. If folks want to tune into the Zoom thing this evening, and we'll get that information up, or you know, take part and comment through the Facebook live stream. Mm-hmm. If you are a white middle class person here in Duluth, Minnesota, why do you need to tune into this? What are you going to learn? What are you going to come away with? And why should you take the time to maybe stretch outside your comfort zone and take part in this evening?
Well, I think the most important thing is that everyone is connected. No person is an island, no matter how much they want to believe that. I mean, if we think about this entire COVID-19 pandemic, the original thought process for a majority of Americans was, that's something that's happening on the other side of the world. It's not my problem. That's not true. And the reality is that it never was true, because everybody has an effect on everyone else. And particularly here in the Duluth Twin Ports community, we have to understand that our community is intertwined in ways that we can't even fathom. And what I hope the individuals who feel like they're not a part of this particular discussion, what they can learn is that they can understand what the concerns of their neighbors are, and maybe even learn some history behind why those concerns are valid, and how they can maybe even be involved in the process of helping communities and individuals and communities heal from these historical issues, and sometimes these present issues that are still kind of ongoing because of systemic oppression, or even just unconscious bias that just kind of keeps going because no one actually calls anyone out on it. I think it's important to call things, to name them, and to work consciously towards making them better.
It's going to be a fascinating conversation. Dr. Glenn Simmons, thank you so much for taking some time to talk with us about it this morning. We will get up the information on our website about the Zoom meeting and about the Facebook live stream, so folks can take part if they're interested, or they can tune in and just listen and learn. Again, Dr. Glenn Simmons, thanks so much for joining us.
All right. Thanks for having me. Have a good day.
Dr. Glenn Simmons, Jr., our guest this morning here on KUMD. He is with the University of Minnesota Medical School Duluth campus, and he's taking part in with a bunch of other fabulous presenters in a Zoom Facebook live stream COVID-19 health officials panel called Disinfecting Misinformation. Tonight it's supported by the UMD NAACP and the Duluth NAACP Health and Environmental Equity Committee.